I was coming from Montgomery. I had my guitar on my back. When this stranger stopped beside me in an antique Cadillac. He was dressed like 1950, half drunk and hollow-eyed. Say it's a long walk to Nashville, would you like to ride? I sat down in the front seat, turned on the radio. Them sad old songs coming out of them speakers was solid country gold. Then I noticed the stranger was ghost white pale when I asked him for a light. I knew there was something strange about this ride. He said, "Drifter, can you make folks cry when you're playing sign? Have you paid your dues? Can you moan the blues? Can you bend them guitar strings? Boy, can you make folks feel what you feel inside? If you're big star bound, let me warn you, it's a long, hard ride."
Hello and welcome to Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. My name is Victor Sosa, joined, as always, by the legend Les Thatcher. And before we get into 60 minutes of doom and gloom in the WWE creative writing room, and I use the words creative writing very loosely, Les, I would like to point out to you that I was going through my archives here on the Victortron 5000, as it were, looking through all the Doc Young Wrestling Weeklies we have performed, and much to, well, it wasn't my complete surprise, because this is the reason I was going through it. I thought we were close to it, but do you realize that we just passed our personal third anniversary working together?
Wow. It's time flies when you're having fun, doesn't it?
I would say, well, I mean, I know I have enjoyed it. I don't know if enjoying carrying me for 3 years. But.
I have too. Yes. We've had a chance to hang out a little bit in Joyzy last year.
That's right.
And at Fan Fest in Charlotte. And we may get to hang out again next year at Fan Fest. Well, it's actually going to be called Reunion, I guess. But there is going to be another event in Charlotte running a Thursday through Sunday, the last couple dates of July, first part of August. I guess it's going to be different. I don't know if it's going to be a training camp yet. I hope there is, obviously, because I think we accomplished a lot this year and had a great time. But anyway, in part it's to, debut the documentary Mid-Atlantic Memories, which Greg Price has put together. I've got some footage in it, and we were talking about doing some more. Whether we get to that or not, I don't know. But anyway, I guess that's the main reason for it. But the vendors will bring in people to sign autographs. I guess there's going to be a Hall of Heroes banquet. There will be Q&A sessions. I guess the only thing that he's not going to put out there himself is the lineup of people to do autographs and Polaroids.
My impression, and this is just the view from the peanut gallery, is that it might probably be the most hectic thing prior to the weekend actually occurring, the most difficult thing for him to put together.
Yeah.
Whereas the camp, you guys sort of take care of that stuff. And the documentary, obviously he'll have a room available where people can pack in and check it out. But the thing in trying to find guests for autographs and photos, that year after year trying to find something new and something fresh to attract attention is probably, especially in recent years, the most difficult part of putting the thing together.
Yeah, I think you're right. So anyway, it should be a lot of, again, I'm sure I'm going to be a part of it, but I hope so. And, I'm excited about it too, because, again, we had such a great time just a few weeks ago. So hopefully, got my fingers crossed that we'll come back with a training camp and, have the same great turnout. I hope with the same trainers and to have a good time. So anyway, we're looking forward to it. So everybody stay tuned to NWA MidAtlanticLegends.com, and all the information, the dates are already up on that thing. So, and that's a great place to have it too. I just enjoyed the hell out of it. Did I say I enjoyed the hell out of myself? I think I did. But anyway, so that's the good news. Let me apologize to the experts that I didn't blow smoke up Brian Alvarez's rear end. you know, and I know some of you probably want to ride me out of town on a rail, which is fine, as long as the rail has a soft saddle. Some of my cut and paste guys, somebody said something about his different style. Let me explain this. I don't care if it's lucha, hardcore, Japanese strong style, whatever that is, sports entertainment, catch-as-catch-can wrestling. I don't care what the style is. Facial expressions and body language are a part of every one of those. And that was my only complaint. I like Brian. And I hold Brian to a higher standard as I would hold myself. Let's say you, Vic, or Dave Meltzer were going to get in the ring. I would have no expectations, and if you guys screwed up everything, I wouldn't have a problem with that because neither one of you are a wrestler. But I expect more out of him, and I didn't see it. So shoot me. What can I say? I think any trainer that actually understands the workings, the inner workings of our business would have said the same thing. So there you have it. Whatever.
And to Brian's credit, by the way, he took it all in stride, as he always does. But if you had a chance to see the historical 1,000th edition of the Figure Four Weekly newsletter, which is up on the site right now, done in a very special style, and it does cover all the news and events of the week, but there's also a couple of mentions in there of Brian's performance and Les's critique, where Brian just has a little bit of fun with it and acknowledges that he is, in fact, horrible.
So, if you're looking for a disagreement, you won't find it here.
It was fun and tongue in cheek, and he was. I mean, the stuff in the Figure Four Weekly is, you know, he's totally cool with it and respects everyone's opinion and just had a little fun with it. That's all.
You know, I have seen Brian work matches where I thought he had a good match. This just wasn't one of them. And I hope if Buddy sat down and watched it, he said the same things I did. Or if Lance watched it, I hope he said the same things. And if they didn't, I hope they got a lot of money for lying. So, there you go. What can I say? Where else are we going with this thing today?
Well, I figured we could spend the rest of the hour just ranting and raving about this horrible abomination of a show that was Raw. But I don't want to do that for an entire hour. However, I do feel like we can't let this hour get away without, even though I know that this being Wrestling Weekly and being available up on WrestlingObserver.com and F4WOnline.com on the weekend, you've had a chance to hear Raw digested and dissected 11 different ways. We can't let this hour go by without talking about how horrendous that show was, can we?
Well, I guess we really can't, although I wouldn't mind. And I think the biggest thing was the whole John Cena thing that just sort of countermanded totally what took place at SummerSlam. And, this came up. You posted something on Facebook, and I commented, and several people commented. But, you know, a Swagger was selling ribs from, almost 2 weeks before that. Rusev's selling an ankle from how long before that? You know, and let me say about those things, I don't, especially ribs, you can wrap an elbow, you can wrap a knee, but when ribs puncture lungs if they break, did anyone ever think of that? And so to me, if I'm trying to build storylines that I want to suspend your disbelief, then I don't want you to believe that the medical people I have backstage are so friggin' inept that they're going to allow somebody out there a day, you know, match after match, with the ribs wrapped, which is like holding a red flag in front of a bull, you know, because obviously, you know, it's in a real world, in real wrestling, if you've got a knee wrap, I'm probably going after that knee, or if your wrist or something like that, because obviously there's a reason for that, that you've got the knee pad on or the wraps. Of course, now today everybody wears a double set of knee pads, regardless of bad knees, good knees, or no knees. But that's your thought process if it's shoot. And my thought process, I can't talk, is that I don't, you know, why not pull a guy and do it occasionally to sell believability? If I want to suspend your disbelief, and sometimes I don't think they do, whether that be the writers or Vince. I know someone, and I guess we should call Dave to task from Monday, his critique Monday, because a couple times he blamed the writers, and he should also go on the board and find out that the writers aren't really responsible for anything. They're just pawns in the whole game. But anyway, you know, little things, it's all in the details. To give an example, and I got to thinking about this through the week, you know, after all the talk about not selling and this and that and the other thing, it's, you know, it's just the small things that make you buy in sometimes more than actually the big things. And I was thinking about, years ago, in St. Louis, they did two shows at the, Chase Ballroom, which is one of the upscale hotels in the city, and at the time wrestling was red hot there. But anyway, I did work one match, and Bobby Bruns, who was the booker at the time, said, Thatcher, stay dressed for the second tape, but you're not working. And I was just a young pup at the time, but, you know, hadn't been in the business a long time, but I didn't understand until he explained it to me. They were going to put the last match on tape through the time limit draw, but to offset your thoughts that was predetermined, they had me dressed with my ring jacket on, and another guy, I forget who, was at the other entranceway, stand outside so that the fans could see us. For what reason? To think that there's another match, so that when this match went through, there was nobody said, well, they had already figured to do that because there was nobody on board. Little details make things work. And had Cena just come out there and, I don't know, you know, the promo he'd done the week before, or, you know, something, I don't know. I keep thinking about this all week, and I think maybe I would have given him, you want to see my and it wouldn't have been Bray Wyatt, because I think Bray Wyatt is losing his steam, or being forced to lose his steam on a weekly basis. You know, I think a guy who would have been a red-hot heel a month ago is no longer really in the position. I mean, he can still be hot, but I don't think as hot as he would have been otherwise. But I would have sent Cena out there with, say, a Heath Slater or somebody like that, you know, and let him eat them alive, not Bray Wyatt. And basically then say, okay, Paul and Brock, now you know my mindset. But I would have also had him sell something, for Christ's sake. Anything would have, you know, other than just say, well, I got my head. I'm coming to kick. I'm not just coming to beat Brock Lesnar or something like that. I'm coming to kick his ass. Congratulations, I would hope. But, you know, then the back way up, Vic, you can, we mentioned this last week. If you knew that he was going to be popping back out there, wow, you know, you'd have given him more of the match on the front end. So, and I think the end result here is because they don't plan ahead. They don't worry about the details. They just throw stuff together and throw it in a ring. Your opinion.
Before we hooked up here this morning, I was watching something in the vault section of the WWE Network. It was the Legends of Wrestling, you know, the roundtable discussions.
Uh-huh.
And it was on the history of Southern wrestling. And your buddy, James J. Dillon, was talking about the transition he made from leaving the Northeast to begin his career in Charlotte, North Carolina. And he was talking about, both he and JR were talking about working at Park Center every particular night of the week. What night of the week was
Monday nights?
Monday nights.
Yeah.
And while they were having that discussion about how it was so different from the Northeast, where in the old Worldwide Wrestling Federation territory, you played the Garden once a month. Whereas in Park Center, for example, you were there every Monday night. Mid-South Coliseum in Memphis, you were there every Monday night. You had to evolve almost on a weekly basis, because you could not afford to give those fans, who were by and large the same people showing up every Monday, the same stuff they'd seen the Monday before. Otherwise, guess what? Nobody's buying a ticket.
Yeah, yeah.
And while I'm listening to that explanation, it occurs to me that really it's not, as you said on my Facebook post, it's not, don't call it old school, But because it's just what works, they don't book this territory like a territory anymore, even though that's really what it is. You can call it a whole global brand, whatever you want to, in corporate speak of 2014. Fact of the matter is this. You got to start treating Raw, in my opinion, like it's Park Center every Monday night, because it may not be the same 3,000 people, but guess what? It's the same 4 million watching. And on Thursday night, treat it like, I don't know, I'll throw up another Mid-Atlantic, like it's County Hall every night, because it's going to be the same 2.8 million people watching or 1.8 million people watching SmackDown. And guess what? If you do it right, once a month you get to have a show at the Charlotte Coliseum on Sunday night. And all those things, those shows and the stuff you did had to tie together. They had to make sense. And because if they didn't, people weren't coming back to the TV set every Monday night. Now, listen, they're still getting close to 4 million every Monday. But you tell me if this TV was compelling, if it made sense, if it was logical, if it had people that people wanted to see, you think that of their 4 million viewers, they'd have barely 600,000 American paying $9.99? $9.99 is a drop in the bucket.
Yeah.
If they were doing compelling TV, they'd have 1.5 million in their sleep.
That's not even 3 gallons of gasoline.
There you go.
Is it? You know, when you talk about the details and you mentioned the Charlotte Park Center and everything, and we've discussed this before, I believe, in detail, and for those who may be relatively new to our show, I'll touch on it again. But because of being in the same place every week or a number of cities on a weekly basis, when I did the burn gimmick in 1967 in Charlotte, where I shaved my left eyebrow and we were made up with new skin and the Mercuricome and Vaseline to appear as though I was burned, Mr. Crockett, Jim Crockett Sr., had me come into the office every 3 or 4 days, and we would determine how much of that scab we took away, because we're selling reality. Like the reality shows that aren't real today, we were selling reality. And, you know, we obviously had people buy in because we started this angle in September, and we blew it off in December and set a record for Christmas attendance at Charlotte's, the old, what's just now Bojangles Arena or Coliseum, whatever, but was the one and only Charlotte Coliseum on Independence Boulevard. So, you know, now, is everybody, can you do the same thing today? Maybe not the same thing, but the same premise, the same fundamental.
The principle still applies.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And whether you blame Vince, whether you blame the writers, whether you blame the concessionaires or the janitors, I don't care who you blame, but it's wrong. You know, so I don't understand. I honestly do not. You know, to me, if I'm going into something that I'm unfamiliar with, you know, that I haven't immersed my life in like I have in this business, I think I would pay attention to those around me who had and find some basis, some, again, a foundation of, to start my involvement in, you know, and ask those who had come before me, am I saying things here that aren't just, shouldn't be common sense for all these people? I don't know. You know, and again, yes, Vince may make the final call, but somebody writes this crazy shit down, don't they? I mean, he doesn't rewrite an entire 3-hour format because he doesn't like one thing. So if you're giving him choices, someone gave him the choice to do this or that. Like now Miz has a stunt double. So the match is a stunt. Okay, we knew that, but are we going to carry a sign saying that? You know, I mean, nonsense like that. Do I think Heath Slater and Titus O'Neil are funny? No. Do I think they make, but somebody does, right? I don't know. I mean, I just sit and scratch my head and I think, you know, it's the frustrating part, I think, whether you're a fan who is relatively knowledgeable about the inner workings or someone like myself, you become frustrated because you see them take one step forward, then two steps back. And this has been going on, what, 3-4 years now?
Minimum.
Yeah. And, you know, again, they're not going to kill the business. There'll always be, you know, and how many times, since you've been, you mentioned we've been doing this 3 years together. Since we've been doing that, how many times have you talked to somebody who, that when they find out that you do a wrestling podcast, that says, you know, I used to watch wrestling and then I outgrew it?
Tons.
Yeah, a lot of people. And a lot of it is because today it's different. I don't know how many people say that to me. I just had I was introduced to a gentleman who was near my age bracket, I guess, just the other day, a friend of one of my in-laws, and he said, I understand you were a wrestler, yes, and, you know, I've been, yeah, I used to watch, and it's changed a lot, so I don't watch anymore. You know, how often do any of these writers hear that? Does Vince hear that? Does any of the Stooges who have their nose buried in Vince's rear end hear that? I'm sure somebody must hear. Are you and I the only two people that are privy to that type of information? That's the part that drives me nuts. You know, again, I as a booker, as a promoter, I want to feel what the fans are buying and make adjustments accordingly, but they're not going to call my shots. It's not a, you got to listen to the fans and do exactly as they know. Your job is to try to emotionally involve them and draw them in and make them want to come back. It's just my stepson and I were talking. We're both Sons of Anarchy fans, both Justified fans on FX. Two of the probably most well-written adult dramas on television in the last few years. This is the last season for Anarchy. There's a reason behind that because with the same cast of characters, how can this story evolve? It has to, at some point, there is no evolvement with Justified because Raylan Givens is a U.S. Marshal in a limited locale. The Hazard Harlan area of central Kentucky, or I guess it's more like central eastern part of the state. But anyway, there can only be so many revenueers or people selling meth or whatever it is, and then they've got to move on to something else. And I'm going to miss both those shows as my stepson is. But the point is, these people are wise enough that, okay, we've run out of ideas. We've got to, so rather we're going out on a high note. Well, of course, the wrestling business, WWE is not going to shut down. That wasn't my point either. The point is, you got to know, well, the old Kenny Rogers song, right? You know when to hold them and know when to fold them. Know when to walk away and know when to run. Somebody has to grab the steering wheel, and hell, even a cattle stampede has a leader. I don't see it here.
I got to ask you a question about something I saw in the Observer. Just an impression. It's not not even really a particular question, more like your reaction, because we're talking about John Cena, and Dave reports in the New Observer, which is up on the front page, that all John Cena stuff this week in particular, I'm sure it probably is most weeks, but definitely this week, was put together by Vince McMahon. And Mr. McMahon, apparently, Dave writes, McMahon felt after the one-sided match at SummerSlam, which Dave also notes they never should have done in hindsight since the follow-up was what it was and rendered it basically irrelevant, McMahon felt in hindsight that the Cena fans would lose faith in him unless he made an immediate statement. And I'm curious to see what you thought of that impression.
I would not feel the same way. In fact, if there was no statement, if we haven't heard from John, if John has gone into seclusion, now we have to actually stop and think in our own mind what might have happened. Why is he in seclusion? Why haven't they heard from him? I think it would make it more meaningful when he does come out of seclusion if it were 2 weeks, you know? And even say, you know, after the decisive loss to Brock Lesnar, I had to do some soul searching. You know, I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing. Again, when I talk about Sons of Anarchy, Jax, who's the leader of the motorcycle group at this point, he's an anti-hero in his own way, but yet, regardless, he has his vulnerabilities, his little things that he's not perfect. He's not the bad. I mean, he's a badass, but he also has had his butt handed to him. Raylan Givens, Timothy Oliphant, who's the star of Justified. It's the same way. You know, great baby faces have vulnerability. Great baby faces have warts. They get their asses handed to them. That's why people get behind them to see justice done. And if you don't have that vulnerability, then you are lacking in something in terms of drawing people emotionally to your side. So, no, I don't think that he needed to come right back with a statement. And the statement he came back with was the same statement he makes most of the time. You know, it wasn't an extremely emotional. It wasn't. It was just a statement. So, no, I don't agree with Vince on that.
You know, my biggest problem is with the John Cena character, and not John Cena personally. I have no ill will versus the guy and all the extracurricular stuff he does above and beyond the Call of Duty, really, for Make-A-Wish, and not just the stuff you see, but there's plenty of stuff none of us see. So it's not a personal thing. But in terms of the way he's presented on television every single week, I think I may have stumbled across a little bit of the reason why the building is split. Let's go see and Cena sucks so often. And the male voices are the ones saying Cena sucks. I think people of my age, within a couple of years in either direction less, have a general feeling that goes something like this. I saw this John Cena character 25 years ago. His name was Hulk Hogan. And you know what? Hogan did it a lot better.
Well, you're right. Hogan, for his egomaniacal ways, was smart enough to know when to sell.
Now, you just hit upon it for me, because I was thinking about this a couple of hours ago in putting this analogy together. And I was explaining this actually to someone else, which is why it popped into my head again today. Someone who hadn't seen Hulk Hogan, who's a little bit younger than I am. And I said, you know, you don't have a frame of reference, but I saw Hogan, and Hogan sold and sold and sold some more. Growing up here, I would see these matches because I was in the territory where the Garden was played every month. And for example, a three-match series, well, it turned out to be a three-match series with Don Morocco, and I think it was 1985, right? It was not unusual, Les, to see that first matchup, especially if they were going to go to a three-month program at the Garden, for the heel to take 80% of that match.
Sure.
The guy, he ate Hogan's lunch the first time they wrestled. And won on, you know, a count-out. It was a count-out, actually, the first time, if I remember right. And he got his hand raised. And then you spend the next 4 weeks on TV in interviews where Morocco's saying, basically, I got your number. You got lucky. You got counted out to save yourself. Next time, you're not going to be so lucky. I'm leaving with your belt. And Hogan would come out and say, and Hogan wasn't the guy, at least on interviews, who would say, this guy got lucky, this guy got this guy got that. Hey, you know what? He got his hand raised. I'm still the champ, and I'm going to prove why next month. But he gave you during the match a reason, if you loved him, to try to will him off the canvas. And if you were not a Hulkamania fan, which I was not, he gave that other guy enough that I sat there and thought, you know what? Tonight could be the night.
Sure. Well,
And they sold that same in the interviews. You know, he didn't, it wasn't no big deal, no this, no that. That guy was a legitimate threat from his promo, and Hogan's promo indicated that the guy was a threat.
Right.
And so there was that feeling of danger when those two got in the ring again. So you went back and you wanted to see what happened.
Sure. Well, you know, that's, that's pretty much the story. That's every babyface I've ever seen worth a damn tried to tell anyway, right? Again, I tell kids, for you to have a strong comeback, you have to go away. I mean, you have to have, you have to give the heel something. You know, a lot of kids say, well, Shawn Michaels' comebacks were just so amazing. But the reason they were so amazing is because Shawn Michaels sold. You know, he gave you something to hang your hat on and a reason to say, God, I hope Michaels comes back and beats this guy. And you know what? The shows we're talking about, Anarchy, Justified, yes, they're not real. I know they're not real. And I would guess that every sane human being that watches them knows the same thing. But also, the point is that those guys still, the story is told so well. The actors do such a great job. that they are, you know, that you are drawn in.
And they don't hang a neon sign on the show that says fake either.
No, they don't. And you don't, I mean, you know that Timothy Oliphant, Raylan Givens in Justified, is, you know, finally going to get his man. But there are times you're not real sure, you know. And the way they tell the story is so amazing, you know. If you, you know, and finding personalities, I think, is so important now, too. You know, and one of the things that's been lacking in our business is giving foundation. If you're into, like, let's say, excuse me, Law and Order, SVU, they tend now to give you more of the detective's backstory, their personal lives, their family lives, their lack of family lives, the reason that they're this way or that way, to give, to add depth, and substance to the character, to the part that that actor's playing. And that's, again, you know, it's just our business, we just keep doing the same thing over and over again to the point of, I don't know, to the point of who cares. You know, it's, you can beat the, you know, USA thing over the head with Rusev and Swagger, or Rusev and now Mark Henry, maybe. At some point, my personal thing is, I just let Diana stand out there and let me see her in profile, and Rusev can do whatever he wants. But it wears thin at some point. You have to shift gears. Like they, you know, when they had Kane and Seth do the, we'll be handicap. Wow, that's original. We didn't do one last week, but the week before we did two, or the week before that we did one, the week before that. So we've skipped a week, so now it's fresh. No, it's not. You know, that's the problem. They do things to death. As a friend of mine sent an email last week, somebody who I think understands the business and whose opinion I do pay attention to, he said, oh, my God, the Bellas at the 10 o'clock hour, it's time to hit that FF button.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And that whole thing, it's like, where are you going with this? You know, well, they wanted on the Diva show. Well, then do it on the Diva show. And leave them separated on the wrestling show. But, you know, it's like Cena's a babyface, Daniel Bryan's a babyface, and are you going to put more heat on Cena because he's sleeping with the nasty Nick? I don't know, you know? There's too many, but the point is, it's not great acting, and you know, is it going to draw you money? Absolutely not. That's to me. And again, I'm not a billionaire and don't own a multi-million-dollar corporation, or not the majority stockholder in a multi-million-dollar corporation. But you know, you got to think that where is this going, and is it going to draw us money? And does 3 hours cost how much to produce? And shouldn't we get as much out of that as we possibly can? And they don't seem to think that's, you know, an important point. I don't know.
If you're listening to this show for the first time because you are a freeloader, welcome and thank you. This show is completely free today, so you're more than welcome to post the link or file elsewhere. Help us spread the word, not just about Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly, but about WrestlingObserver.com. And if you like what you hear, you know, there's plenty more where this came from. Not only are there archives going back several years for Wrestling Weekly, but if you sign up for a subscription, there's anywhere from 12 to 15 new podcasts on this site every single week. Plus, as a member, you've got full access to over 6,000 archived audio shows dating back to 2005, plus hundreds of new and archived Wrestling Observer newsletters with Dave Meltzer, of course, the preeminent wrestling journalist for the past 30-plus years, and Figure Four Weekly online newsletters from Brian Alvarez as well, all for the paltry sum less of, well, stop me if you've heard this before, $9.99 a month.
My God, I think, really? Is that all? I hadn't heard that. No.
That is all, in fact. And you get tons more content on this site, I dare say. In fact, that's factually accurate. I can confirm that. Many more hours of programming on the Wrestling Observer WWE.com website than there is currently available at the WWE Network. But so that we're not all WWE bashing all hour long, because frankly, that just wears me out, and I hope it's not wearing you out listening to this. I want to ask you a fun question about your trip to Stamford, Les. We touched upon it last week because you were featured in the Shield documentary that is on the WWE Network right about now, Journey to SummerSlam with the Shield. But we did not get a chance to talk about your whirlwind trip in and out of the New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, tri-state area last week.
It was fun. As I'm still in North Carolina, the wife's rehabbing, and I flew out of Asheville and changed planes in Charlotte. Anyway, they had a car waiting for me at LaGuardia, and we went up, and I was given a tour of the studios, which obviously if you're not impressed, then you don't have your eyes open. Amazing setup they have there at the WWE studios. And then I saw the cassette tape collection. My God, Vic, you should see it. I mean, these walls are on rollers, and you know you can accordion them all together or open them up and walk down between them. And the tens of thousands of cassette tapes that are there are just, they'll blow you away when you see that. But I was, you know, it was fun. I was treated well. I came in, was taken on a tour, walked right into a studio, which was already set up for me. Do you want something to drink? You know, would you like something to drink? This or that or the other thing. We laid down, I don't know how much time we actually went through, and I think some of the stuff I talked about other wrestlers or other things may be used later on. I don't know. We had lunch. They put me in a car back to LaGuardia and back here. It was a good trip. I was treated well. They're very professional, and the people I dealt with, were just, I enjoyed myself. I was comfortable with them, and it was a good day. A friend of mine is burning me a DVD of the special, so I'll get a chance to look at it here in a little while when it gets to me in the mail. But I didn't have the $9.99. I don't know if you knew that's what it costs for the network or not, $9.99.
Well, that's what they've been telling me.
Yeah. And if you missed it, it's $9.99. So I had a good time. I haven't seen the special, but I will. I hope I added something to it. So anyway, it was a good time, and I was very impressed with the studio. And like I say, the people I worked with were friendly, engaging, professional, and it was a good time.
You've got to be the first person I've talked to in I don't know how long who talked about going in and out of LaGuardia and did not have a horror story accompanying this.
I don't know why I don't, but I don't. The only horror story is from Asheville, North Carolina. You're going to fly to either Atlanta or Charlotte. The horror story for me is the short Asheville flights to Charlotte, which is less than an hour, lands in Terminal E. And the big flights, like going to LaGuardia, go out of Terminal B.
Oh, I've been in the Charlotte airport. That's a hustle.
Yes, and then coming back, it's into Terminal B and out of Terminal E back to Asheville. So I'm gonna do that boogie a couple more times come September when I make the trips to fly into Hartford, Connecticut for Antonio Thomas to do the Palmer Mass weekend, and then when I fly into Philly to do the Monster Factory for Danny Cage the following weekend. So that was my biggest hang up was, thank God, I had enough time that I didn't have to try to do my O.J. Simpson impersonation of running through the airport and vaulting over railings and stuff, because I'm a little old for that thing, you know, at this point in time. But that was, yeah, LaGuardia wasn't bad at all. Well, you know, and here's the other thing, too. It was all U.S. Air, but I have the pre-check through the security. So I didn't have to pull the shoes off all that craziness. It was just empty my pockets, run my shoulder bag through and on out the other side. So the lines are a little shorter there. So that made it a little bit easier, too.
All right, I'm going to ask you a question that I hope will be seen as a little more fun. Put the fun back in this show as we head down the home stretch here, Les.
Okay.
Someone tweeted me a while back, and I apologize for just getting around to it, but someone said one of the things they love hearing us discuss, particularly stuff from back in the day, let me find the tweet here. I think the things I enjoy most are when Les talks about the guys that mentored him. So I thought maybe it might be kind of cool to not only discuss a mentor or two, Les, but maybe even a little bit about what or who in particular got you hooked as a young man into this wacky world of professional wrestling.
Who I brought into the business?
No, not necessarily, but maybe as a kid, who was the guy you saw on TV and said, I want to be like that guy.
Okay, well, that guy was Nature Boy Buddy Rogers. I realize in Cincinnati as a young child, and it's on my Facebook page in the photos, but it's also floating around out there somewhere else because somebody tagged me with it on Facebook. There's a picture of myself and Nature Boy Buddy Rogers taken at the Music Hall in Cincinnati, which is still there, by the way. They don't have wrestling matches there anymore, but that's where we used to go to the Al Half matches on Friday nights at the Music Hall in Cincinnati. And there's a picture of me with Buddy Rogers. I was about 12 years old at the time. And he was the guy. I fell in love with wrestling to begin with. And on a neighbor's little 10-inch black and white screen, we didn't have a TV at that time. And we went to the neighbors and saw wrestling, and I was hooked. But also, Al Haft, based in Reynoldsburg, Ohio, just outside of Columbus, was one of the biggest promoters in the country at that time. He covered five states, Indiana, Kentucky, Michigan, West Virginia, and Ohio, and had a huge roster. And at some point, virtually everybody that I saw on national television, either New York or Chicago or Hollywood or wherever, ended up coming through that territory. So I saw the cream of the crop. I you know, people who, if I mention a name, nobody will remember or even heard of, Ruffy Silverstein, but Enrique Torres, Lou Thesz, Buddy Rogers, Ivan Rasputin, the Mad Russian, who they tell me drove a milk truck somewhere in New England. But the characters were so, you know, and of course the original Gorgeous George I saw on TV, and Antonino Argentino Rocca, who wrestled barefoot and was, you know, the acrobat of the ages at that point in time. Supposedly his legs were insured for $1 million and all this and that, you know. So that was the background in which I became immersed into the wrestling business. But Buddy Rogers was the man for me. I wanted to be Buddy Rogers. I can still do the Rogers strut, which is different than the Fargo strut, and which is the Jarrett thing is a takeoff on Fargo. But it was Buddy Rogers that his was different than Fargo's, and I can do the Buddy Rogers strut, although I probably won't do it for you when you ask me at this point in my life. But
how did you know?
How did I know?
Since I'm going to see you in a month, how did you know I was going to ask you to do that?
Well, if I bring that up, usually somebody does. But it was his was a little different. But Rogers, I think the thing that hooked me with Buddy was he just dominated. When he came out and started to walk down the aisle, you knew he was the man. He carried himself in that manner. I think I've said it here before, and if I have, I'll repeat myself. If I haven't, I'll say it for the first time. Over the years, there are probably two men in the wrestling business who, if they walked into a room and I had my back to that door, I would still feel their presence and probably turn around. And those two people would be Buddy Rogers and Lou Thesz. That's the way they carried themselves. That was the aura that they projected, you know. And so Roger, I wanted my mother to let me bleach my hair. This is when I was 10, 11 years old. Thank God she didn't, or I'd probably been in a fight in the schoolyard every day. Because back then, you know, I don't even know if little girls bleach their hair, never mind little boys. But, that was the effect that Buddy Rogers had on me. And, if I have something in the wrestling business I don't feel I ever accomplished, I never had the opportunity to work a match with Buddy Rogers, and I always wanted. We never met, crazy enough. I mean, when he came into the Carolinas, it was after I had already moved on. It was living in Knoxville and helping run that territory. So I never got an opportunity to work with Rogers or actually ever even shake his hand and say, hey, you're the reason I got in this business. But he is and probably was the mainstay in that respect and the biggest, I belonged to several fan clubs back then. Fan clubs were a big deal. I belonged to the Don Arnold fan club. Probably everybody listening to this has never heard of Don Arnold. Ruffy Silverstein, I mentioned, and Buddy Rogers. Rogers was, that's who I wanted to be. And of course, as I grew into the business, I realized I wasn't going to be and nobody else was either. So he was one of a kind and an amazing worker. I've heard this story and I didn't see it, but I was told this by a couple old timers, and whether it's true or whether it's lore, I don't know. But they said they had seen Rogers so good that he could be a baby face in the first fall, turn himself heel in the second fall, and come back as a baby face in the third fall.
And get over all three falls.
Yes. Yes. But the psychology, obviously, and I believe he was that good. Now, whether this actually happened or whether it's, again, it's just a story, I don't know. He was an amazing worker. And again, I always recommend the Rogers O'Connor match from Comiskey Park, Chicago, 1961. Where Rogers won the NWA title from Pat O'Connor. And so, it's a great match to watch. You see two of the greatest workers ever. We were talking earlier on this show about facial expressions and body language and the details. And these two guys are about the details. And that's a good match to watch.
You never had a chance to work with Rogers, but Flair did. Did you ever get a chance to talk to Rick about that experience?
We've never discussed it, honestly. Nature Boy Ric Flair, excuse me, before he ever met Buddy, George Scott sat him down in the office in Charlotte and had him watch Rogers tapes, films, over and over and over and over and over again. So Flair picked a lot of the little things up from Budrow and saw a lot of you'll see a lot of similarities if you watch Rogers and you watch a younger Ric Flair. Never did get a chance to talk to him. Honestly, there was one time Ernie Roth, the Grand Wizard, who was a brilliant mind in the wrestling business, and he and Vince Jr. were very close, and he worked at, as everyone knows, worked at WWF for years and years as a manager. Ernie and I were buddies, and at one point he called me and said, "You want to come into New York and get a chance to work with the Nature Boy? I can set it up." But at the time, I was doing well where I was at, and also at the time, New York was not necessarily land of the giants, but they used a lot of big guys, so size wasn't as critical in the southeastern part of the United States, so I didn't make the trip. I wish I had, so I would have got that opportunity, but never happened, like I say, if there was something in my career I feel I missed, that would be a chance to work with Buddy Rogers.
Those first few years when you were just getting started, it's very different back then. I'm sure all of you guys probably stuck around for the entire show and watched every match. None of that stuff that happens from time to time these days where guys don't stick around. But were there particular guys, especially in those first, maybe 5 to 7 years you were working, that when they were on the show with you, you made it a point to get out there and watch that match and learn?
Yeah, well, the better baby faces. And when I was in New England, I had the opportunity to drive. I not only worked on these shows, but I had the opportunity to drive Rocca around and Furpo around, Pompero Furpo and Pat O'Connor and the Bernetti brothers, Joe Tangaro and Guy Bernetti, Donnie Fargo and Eric Pedersen. When these type of talents were brought in, Santos brought them in, I had the better car, so I was the guy that drove them around, so I had the opportunity to talk to them and watch them. But yeah, as a babyface, Bill Melby, Billy Darnell, to name a few, Jackie Nichols, and some obscure names that probably nobody would know. Well, Don Eagle was a great baby face. Now talk about little things that you kind of notice. I noticed with Eagle, Don Eagle, his dad was his, came in and had the tom-tom at ringside, you know, all the pageantry of being the American Indian, that sort of thing. But Eagle played to children, and I realized that when I got in the business that by playing to the kids, he hooked the parents because the kids couldn't come without the parents. And little things like somebody, you know, maybe had their little son, say a 4 or 5 year old, dressed with a headdress or something like that, and Don would pick that child up on his way to the ring and carry them down to the ring with him, you know. And looking back at it, you know, you kind of think, of course, I was a little old at the time for him to be picking me up, but I'm thinking, oh, you know, that kid, that, you know, isn't that a great thing for that little boy or little girl, whatever it was? And but I realized that he was marketing, you know, he was selling himself. At the same time, Ruffy Silverstein, I remember seeing Ruffy, was not a good looking guy, but he was a hell of a pistol, a hell of a shooter, and at least in the Al Half territory was a babyface. I remember him coming, walking, and a couple little old ladies maybe sitting at, you know, with a seat opening. He'd sit down just for a moment and say hi to them, you know, maybe pat one of them on, you know, give him a kiss on the cheek or something. But that was his way of working the audience, because back then you got to realize the guys in the ring didn't turn around and talk to the people, or at least, you know, not to the degree that it's, you know, they didn't pander to the people the way it's done today. They, you know, they got their heat, or they got over by, you know, by the guy working with the other guy in the ring. So little things like that I noticed, you know, and I guess maybe that's part of the reason I'm so hooked on details today, you know, because it was, you know, of all the hundreds of kids that I've worked with, Vic, I found one young man from Texas that had kind of done the same things that I'd, but I had this big long pillow, which for, I don't even know why my mother, where it came from or why she had it, but it was about the same height that I was at age 9 or 10. And I would sit down in front of art when we had it, you know, we finally got our little black and white TV, and it wasn't that I just played wrestle, but it, like, for example, I'd see Buddy Rod or any babyface with a headlock, and I would put that headlock on that pillow, and I would also copy the way they, the placement, the way they held their head, the way they placed their legs as, you know, in the sitting position on the mat. And so in essence, I guess I was kind of teaching myself a little bit about the business without realizing that. And I, this young man out of Texas, I remember talking about it. He spent a year with me, and he's no longer in the business. But anyway, you know, that he had done this, kind of the same thing. So in a way, I don't know if young people do that anymore, you know? And of course, the things we're talking about earlier, the lack of Cena selling or the lack of details in many respects, is the sad thing is that's one of the reasons that I work so hard on details when I do these weekend camps, is because too often the young people that are breaking in the independents mimic what they see on television, and sometimes that's not what they should, you know. There's a foundation they put in, and I always explain, look, this is a business. If WWE is going to pay you a healthy 6 figures or 7 figures to be a complete idiot, by all means, be a complete idiot. It's a business. You're being paid to do that. But before you get to that point, put a solid foundation of fundamentals under you. That way, you can be of value to any promotion, anywhere, in any situation. And I think the guys who have traveled, well, B.J. Whitmer would be one, and Nigel McGuinness would be another. And these guys have worked Japan, they've worked Ring of Honor, they've worked, you know, different places. And that was what I stressed when I had a gym and was working with guys at least 4 times a week, every week. So I think that's, you know, part of what I picked up as a kid without actually knowing what I was picking up.
Now, as a grizzled veteran, since you worked approximately 20 years full-time, say 15 to 17 years in now, I imagine you're decidedly more difficult to impress. So when you were making your rounds throughout the territory, say 15 to 17 years into the career, was there still guys who you stopped what you were doing and said, I want to go watch his match?
Well, a lot of times, sure. Terry Funk was one of those people. Everybody talks about the Dorian Briscoe talents, but Terry was so talented as well. Plus, Terry is a visionary. I mean, I've heard him talk about things, this or that's going to happen in our business, a few years before it ever happened, but he saw it coming. He was one of those guys. Jack Briscoe, I remember being in Tampa territory when Jack and Jerry wrestled Dory Jr. and Terry, and I wanted to be sure to see the match. And of course, you got the sibling rivalry plus the two families, and what a hell of a match it was. You can pick up things from a lot of different people. That's the thing too. It doesn't have to be somebody that's older than you, better than you, or more experienced than you. But the point is, break it down to where, try things in a practice match, not in front of a bunch of people, and look at yourself. That's the thing the young guys today have at their disposal, and I didn't have years ago, was the chance of, watching themselves on tape all the time. And I remember, I'm trying to think, I broke in at 60, and it was probably 63 before I actually saw myself, on a show. And then I thought, oh, God, I'd really do that. I wish, and I made some changes initially. I don't remember exactly what those things were, but I made some changes because I didn't like what I saw. Young people have, an opportunity to watch themselves grow in this business now. We didn't have that opportunity years and years ago.
Folks, it's now time for the portion of the program where we hear about Les Thatcher on tour.
Okay. Well, I won't cover all the details, but yeah, I'm in a couple weeks I'm gonna be a busy beaver. The weekend of September 13 and 14, on that Saturday the 13th, I'm in Blue Ridge, Georgia for Deep Southern Championship Wrestling. Full day of training and a show that night. There will be two rings set up. As I understand, we've got quite a lineup of kids signed up already from like five different states. Woody supplies lunch and bottled water. If you are coming to train with us, you will be on the show that night. I think it would probably be a two-ring battle royal. And for more information, call 706-633-4396 or check out dscw.org. The next day, I'm going to drive up to Knoxville on Sunday the 14th. For the Southeastern Championship Wrestling Reunion at the Tennessee Valley Fair in Chihuahua Park. It begins at 4 p.m. There will be three matches. I'm not sure what the matches are, but I am, as a former host of Southeastern Championship Wrestling, I will be hosting a roundtable Q&A discussion with legends such as Paul Orndorff, Bob Armstrong, Bob Orton Jr., Ronnie Garvin, Robert Fuller, Jimmy Golden, the Mongolian Stomper, Ronda Don Wright, Tony Peters, and possibly some more on that lineup. For more information there, you can call 865-973-8092. Saturday and Sunday, September 2021, I will be in Palmer, Massachusetts for my buddy Antonio Thomas at Ringsport Pro Wrestling Gym. If you're in the area and aspiring to be a professional wrestler, check it out with my buddy Antonio, because he is deadly serious about the way he trains his people. A couple of his people were in the running for the scholarship, by the way, at FanFest a month ago. And we're going to train for 2 days, and I'm going to get to go to the Basketball Hall of Fame while I'm up there too, by the way, which is an inducement for me. You can sign up at ringsportprowrestling@gmail.com or give Antonio a call, 413-244-4983. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, September 26th, 27th, 28th, Paulsboro, New Jersey, my first trip to the Monster Factory for Danny Cage. I'm really looking forward to this. Here they got a great facility. We will do a Q&A on Friday evening. We will train a full day Saturday and a full day Sunday. And if you're coming in from out of town, get in touch with Danny, and you can make arrangements to bring a sleep bag, and you can stay at the Monster Factory. They'll put some guys up there, so you won't have the motel expense. To sign up or for more info, monsterfactoryseminar@gmail.com or call Danny at 609-471-7904. And then Friday, Saturday, Sunday, October 10, 11, 12, I'm going back to the Tri-Cities in Tennessee, and we'll be in Elizabethan, Tennessee at the Evolution Sports Gym, which is an amazing place to train. I'm looking forward to getting back there. I'm going up there for NWA Smoky Mountain Wrestling. We will have a Q&A on Friday night, two full days of training Saturday and Sunday. There is a show in Kingsport, Tennessee on that Saturday night. And if you're interested in hooking up with us, you can email office@nwasmokymountain.com or give Tony Gibbons, the boss, a call at 423-773-5449.
Les Thatcher's efforts to educate as many wrestlers as possible who are interested in learning more about the art and the craft that is pro wrestling. And by the way, in the process, miss every single football Sunday this NFL season so far is going pretty well.
You know, before we go, that's something too. With SmackDown moving, I'm thinking they're moving to Thursday night in the fall, which is probably not the right time to get great ratings because NFL's got Thursday night games on now.
That's right. Now the first 8 weeks are on CBS, so I would hope that the good folks at Sci-Fi would be willing to give WWE somewhat of a pass the first half of the NFL season.
Yeah, I would think so as well. And, of course, TNA has moved to Wednesday night, so a big shift in everything. I see that Jeff Jarrett and his global, he was at New Japan and now is a heel, and he brought out the guitar, and I could have lived without the guitar forever.
Yeah, he's part of the Bullet Club now.
Yeah, well, he's hooked up with some good guys there, obviously. But, Jeff, leave the friggin' guitar out of this. Jesus Christ. Talk about passe, and please, get rid of it. Let Jeff Jarrett beat somebody, not the damn guitar.
Well, if you had a guitar handy, I would ask you to play the Ballad of WrestlingObserver.com while I thank every single person who's had a chance to download the show and listen to it this week completely free of charge. You're more than welcome to post this link or the file any place you like. Help us spread the word about WrestlingObserver.com because hopefully you and those who will hear the link that you post will like what they hear and consider signing up for a subscription. There's anywhere from 12 to 15 new radio shows on this website every single week. Plus, if you decide to sign on as a member, you're going to have full access to over 6,000 archived audio shows, many of which include Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez as well. And the archives date back to 2005, as well as getting access to all the new and archived Figure Four Weekly online newsletter and, of course, the Wrestling Observer newsletter as well. And Les, I have to say that as we wrap this thing up, I am extremely honored and grateful to have had the privilege and continue to have the privilege to sit under the learning tree with you, my friend, for the past 3 years, and I hope it lasts a hell of a lot longer.
Vic, I've enjoyed it immensely. You have led me from the Valley of Evil into the or whatever. You've done a hell of a job here, and I've enjoyed it myself. And yes, I hope that we can continue to do something. And you know, you may not agree with everything that Vic and I throw out there, but take my word for it. I love this business. I want it to be good, and the only reason I bitch and complain and bellyache is because I want it to be good, because I have a passion, and because it's been my life for 54 years.
And with that, my friends, he is the legend, Les Thatcher. My name is Victor Sosa. We thank you so much for taking time out of your weekend to check us out here at Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. If you like what you heard, you know what you can do. You can come back and check us out next week.